This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. Thank you for staying with us. This is Koo Sitrong on BFM's Morning Run with Wong Xiaoning and Shazana Mokhtar. Now, Apple Daily has seen its doors close in Hong Kong.
Yeah, sadly. So after 26 years in print, it has announced that it's closing down. This is after authorities said last week that the paper had breached the national security law and then in turn froze its bank accounts and arrested key staff members.
So Apple Daily's outspoken founder Jimmy Lai was among several media figures and activists jailed last year, just months after the imposition of the sweeping new national security law. The newspaper itself was openly critical of the Chinese state and has been a standard bearer for the pro-democracy movement.
So, of course, in a massive raid last week, hundreds of police officers sacked the paper's headquarters, detained the chief editor, four other executives. They froze $2.3 million of Apple Daily's assets, which meant the paper no longer had money to pay itself or its staff or daily operations. So the question is whether this signals the end for press freedom and democracy in Hong Kong, which, like the rest of the world, is still trying to shake off the last dregs of a pandemic. To discuss this, we're talking now to Michael Frank, a senior analyst of public policy at the Economist Intelligence Unit. Michael, now, obviously it's 26 years in print. It's been a long time. Just a week after Chinese authorities said that the paper breached the national security law, what do you think have been the reactions to the what looks like the end of press freedom in Hong Kong?
People are concerned here, for sure. I think this is it seems like the worst case scenario that a lot of people were worried about when the national security law was imposed last year, that a private publication would be forced to close. And I think that the Hong Kong government may argue that it was a technicality, that they made that decision themselves because their assets were frozen. But I think it's pretty clear that Apple Daily it ultimately came to an end. It was a direct result of its criticism of the Hong Kong government and the Chinese central government.
Are we going to see other outlets critical of Beijing similarly close, or will this spur more vocal dissatisfaction against the Chinese government?
Well, the popular press is certainly worried that they could be in breach of national security law. And these tactics seem to work. So I think there's two sides to this. On the one hand, the Hong Kong government and the Chinese central government don't really appreciate the attention that they get globally from these types of events. And I think we don't view necessarily that they're going out looking for another target after Apple Daily is closed. On the other hand, as I mentioned, these tactics seem to work. So the shot across the bow has been fired. And to the extent that other members of the popular press continue with similar reporting, that clearly is not acceptable to either the Hong Kong or the central governments, then now you see the playbook that will probably be rolled out in those cases as well. Freezing assets, going after senior leadership under national security law, and ultimately forcing a closure.
But Michael, could there be any implications as a result of this Apple Daily's closure, aside from perhaps the press self-censorship, do you see businesses, especially international businesses or even expatriates, being nervous about this law?
Yeah, this is unsettling, I think, for the international business community. And it's not clear that this is this itself is an event that's going to trigger any sort of exodus. But I think it's part of the longer term narrative. You know, a lot of people are going to see what has happened here and see it as another point of evidence that Hong Kong's free and open society is a thing of the past. And, you know, that may not force Apple Daily closing may not force people to leave this city in its own right. But longer term, you look at, you know, the strategic decisions that are being made all the time in international businesses about where to put staff, where to make investments. And I think this is part of a broader narrative that you have to think twice now about whether you're going to commit your future to Hong Kong in a way that you didn't need to do even a year ago before this law was put into place.
Yeah, Michael, it seems as if China is really trying to, well, it is flexing its muscles and has ratcheted up its control over Hong Kong in a big way. From the perspective of the EIU, you know, I mean, obviously we've seen things like Jack Ma's and Alibaba's IPO, Hong Kong, and financial, obviously, Apple Daily. What does this mean for the region in just, you know, in just the socio-political terms?
You know, we have actually, we've been tracking democracy through our Democracy Index for about 15 years. And we've got, I think, the world's best time series analysis of the status of democracy in Asia. And unfortunately, we've seen a general regression across the region. And it seems to be driven by values that there's less pressure from perhaps less pressure from Western governments. You look at the Trump administration's 4 years where they certainly didn't care that much about the status of democracy anywhere in the world. And I think this is, again, part of a trend that's concerning. After so much progress in the past few decades, we've stalled. And it's unclear what it's going to take to get back to the track of, you know, making continuous, albeit slow, progress in terms of the democratic space in Asia. But this is, you know, I think a really worrying development as part of that broader narrative for Asia too. There are reverberations, you know, there are activists all over the region who are looking to one another for inspiration and to see their counterparts in Hong Kong being put in prison and seeing the press being shut down. That certainly will worry them.
And I guess turning our attention very quickly to the COVID-19 situation in Hong Kong, Michael, Hong Kong has been quite successful in tamping down the COVID-19 pandemic. I think it's seeing single-digit cases for the past few days. It's expected to reach herd immunity by early next year. Do you think its success in controlling the pandemic, would that serve to sort of counterbalance the regressions it's making in the democratic space?
Not really. You know, public trust remains quite low. So Carrie Lam's approval rating is up a little bit from a low of about 20% on the eve of the pandemic, but it's still only around 30% now. And that seems to be a ceiling, which, again, is quite low. There's two tracks to this. You know, it's disagreement with the strategy itself of zero COVID, whether that's realistic, and a lot of the policy innovations that have been put forward to try to keep those cases low are actually deeply unpopular. One example of that is these ambush lockdowns where they go around to, you know, an apartment complex where there's been a confirmed case and essentially lock it down. Nobody can go in or out for several hours until every single person in that complex has been tested. In terms of business confidence, it seems like the big focus, if you look at a lot of op-eds recently in international media from people based in Hong Kong, the draconian quarantine policy is the biggest focus right now and the source of dissatisfaction with the government. So it's not like these low cases are actually really helping the government that much. And ultimately, yeah, I think our view at the EIU is that there's no substitution to restoring that civic space in terms of restoring public trust, that as long as these types of steps are being taken, you're going to continue to see a deeply unsatisfied public here in Hong Kong.
Okay, Michael, thank you so much for your time. That was Michael Frank, a senior analyst of public policy at the Economist Intelligence Unit. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.